Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
We're talking about the Beatles all week.
How many days is that?
8 days. No, actually 5. Okay, we're here in the basement.
Yes, we are.
We're going to be here in my basement all this week.
Yep.
Got the place all set up.
Mm-hmm.
Got some coffee.
It's great.
Because it's early, this recording session mm-hmm. that we're starting with. And we are going to talk all this week about a band I'm not that familiar with. Who are we talking about this week?
To talk about the Beatles. It's an experiment amongst our listeners and the Rock in the Suburbs editorial board, which includes, for this purposes, Brad Mailer. Hello, Mr. Brad.
Hello, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming. And we're gonna do something we've never done. Have we ever done anything like this?
No. So I'll let you explain, because it was yours and Brad's idea, right?
We kind of came up with it.
But before we do that, let's just establish who we are. So the show is called Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And as you mentioned, with us is
Brad Mailer.
Thanks for coming over.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And you had suggested that something to do with December being a good time to talk about the Beatles. Why is that?
Well, Brad and I were texting one night, and our theories tend to get convoluted when we're sort of texting each other, sitting at home, kind of thinking about stuff. And Brad was, bringing in some interesting stuff about sort of the sea change in youth culture and things in the mid-60s, 1964 in particular. And
this is what you guys text about?
Yeah.
Well, okay. All right.
Well, you know me and theories. Yeah. I think you know that much about me.
That's right. Yeah. And
I've got a lot of them.
Yeah. And somehow I got in my mind, I started thinking about, I don't know if I texted this to you directly, Brad, about the Beatles always did a fan club single at Christmas time, mm-hmm. right? They would always send that out. And, it's the holidays, and I just think that's all I got on that,
Okay.
So the Beatles would be a good thing. But also, we wanted to try this idea of a top 15 because it fits well with our format, and we figured the Beatles were
I like that.
Big band.
I'll set that up here. But the December being, so what did the Beatles do every
They always
December?
Sent out a fan club, a Christmas single, right, for
Christmas
their fan
single,
club.
Not mm-hmm. Christmas song.
Not necessarily.
In fact, did they ever do a Christmas song?
I don't know if they did or not, but I know every year they would send out a single to their fan club.
To the fan club, okay.
Yeah, and eventually I think it got too big, so they, it was like impossible to produce.
So that's
why. I need 500,000 of these, that's like not going to happen.
REM did that too with their fan club.
They did.
I was never in the REM fan club, mm-hmm. but my friend, who is just a huge, like super mega fan of REM, he was always in the fan club, and every Christmas time would get a single, that they would send out just to the fan club members. So that was nice.
I just found this information. They sent out spoken and musical messages on flexi disc to members of their fan club in the United Kingdom and the United States each Christmas from 1963 to 1969. So
wow, flexi disc.
They would put a message on there too. Yeah.
Love it. For the kids out there who don't know what flexi disc is, it literally was a like 45. Well, if you have to know what a 45 is, first of all, if you know that, it was a 45 on this like flexible plastic material.
Yeah.
Usually just one side. Was that
usually
right?
Usually one side.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it was so thin, but it would have grooves and you could play it. And a lot of times I just remember it being like, and I guess it was super probably cheap to produce and cheap to mail,
yeah.
which mm-hmm. would work for something like this, for sort of a novelty piece. But I also remember it being the same kind of thing that you would find on the back of cereal boxes.
That's right.
When we were kids, right? Mom, I want that cereal, because it had a cutout and you could cut out the flexi disc at the back of the cereal box and play whatever Banana Split song or whatever it was that was on there.
And then later, fanzines, for the same reason, it was pretty cheap. So they started putting them in there, having a band do it. But actually, I before we get ourselves in deep trouble, it says the first one was Good King Wenceslas, and then they had a chorus of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Ringo.
so they did do a Christmas
Yeah, and
music.
They had messages, so yeah.
So a lot of this stuff has not been re-released, I don't think, has it? Maybe on the anthology
I'm not really sure.
That anthology box mm-hmm. maybe had some of that stuff. I don't know. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So speaking of fan clubs.
Yeah.
So we have a little closed Facebook group, which is a fan club. I don't want to give you too much information now, because I think we're going to start to open that up a little bit more to more listeners. But we have sort of a core group of like the hardcore listeners who are with us, most of them like from the beginning of this show, and mm-hmm. they're part of this closed group, which we call a fan club. And so to make our countdown chart of favorite Beatles songs. I hesitate to call them best, but favorite, people's favorites, Beatles songs. We just went to that group.
Yeah.
These are the hardcore listeners of the show. And we asked them, you know, rank your favorite Beatles songs, and then we compiled a master list. And so we're going to count that down all this week, right?
Uh-huh. That's
and
the plan.
And like I said, see how this goes. Maybe we'll do this with other bands in the future, and we'll tell people how they can also become part of that club and get involved in these efforts. Right.
Right. And I'm really interested, once we kind of get it out there for everybody this week, to have feedback on it, which we'll inevitably get because we get so much good, you know, feedback and response from our listeners. So it'd be cool to see what people think of it, how it went, and, you know, how it could be either improved or just trash that idea, you idiots.
There's that too. And I want to say that this is highly scientific and was audited by the firm of
Mailer and Mailer.
but
don't blame me, man.
I don't know that I can go that far. What we did was we asked people to just submit top 10 lists, and we just added up the votes, and then the very, very small editorial team of you and me and Brad we broke the ties and sort of made the order based on not only the vote totals, but also some of our personal preferences as well. So that's where we get the 15. So we're going to count 15 to 1, three songs each day.
Yep.
So let's kick it off with the number 15 Beatles song. Here we go. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Me too.
And Your Bird Can Sing off of Revolver.
Revolver.
So initially, or immediately, I should say, we are establishing that this is not necessarily the typical Beatles, you know,
no.
top list that you might see in other places, right? This is a deep cut. And I would say people who are big Beatles fans, I think, you know and probably love this song, but it's not one that probably is familiar to the casual listener, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Are those Rickenbackers?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, but it kind of sounds like that to me.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It might be. It's twin guitar lead. I love that line. I love how up and down the neck it goes. And
yeah,
it's
it really is great.
So precise. And then the other thing too, listening to this now in headphones especially, and you should always listen to Beatles in headphones as much as you can because there's so much going on in those songs. But there's a really melodic bass line to that song.
And yeah, Paul is one of the best bass players out there, no doubt.
Yeah.
Like, he's absolutely so unique, I think, in his playing.
It gives it sort of, at the same time, the guitars have sort of a drive to them, you know, start to finish. Like, we're going from point A to point B with these guitar lines, but then the bass gives it kind of a little bit more of a bounce to it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't have that same thing. And then there's also a rhythm guitar part in the background that you can hear too, that just almost hitting just like those quarter notes and stuff that just gives it a nice blend too. So I think it's a fantastic song. It's one of those certain, you know, as much as you can for the Beatles, it's a sort of hidden gem, I think.
Yeah. And I think as we go through this week and this list, you're going to probably get a sense of some of the people that participated by giving their top 10 seem to really like a certain guitar sound. And, you know, that kind of epitomizes it in some ways right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jangly, but also driving kind of at the same time. I think Mike Wagner must have played this riff a few times. I wonder if he can play it all on one guitar. You think he can? Now,
I bet he did it too.
You were talking about this, Brad. Repeat that before we turn the microphones on.
Yeah, like, so this song is a song that I think it was Joe Walsh who spent a really long time learning the parts that are actually two parts played by George and Paul,
right?
That line at the beginning, whatever. Like Joe Walsh, like spent all this time learning it, and he did it, but turns out later, you know, he finds out that it was not not a single guitar part.
Yeah. He never knew that.
It was two guys playing. Awesome. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I don't think that's the first thing in life that took Joe Walsh a long time to figure
no,
out.
No, maybe not.
So, that's good. So speaking of guitars, let's go into the number 14 okay. song.
It's evolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's gonna be alright? Alright. Right. You say you got a real solution. Well, you know.
Okay. What I think is funny there too is for such a great sort of like fuzz guitar
yeah.
wall there, everything, when it gets down to the solo, it's like electric piano.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
strange.
It's kind of a funny thing. But leave it to the Beatles for that. I love this song. I know this one might be a bit on the cliche side now over all these years, but the thing I love about it is that it shows that the Beatles, when they wanted to, could really rock out.
Yeah.
Right.
And mm-hmm. yep.
and at that time, 1968. You know, to me, it almost felt like they were in some ways, you know, always in friendly competition with those other British invasion bands and that kind of stuff. And sort of being like, we can play like the Kinks, or we can play like yeah. the Who, you know, we mm-hmm. can do that kind of stuff too. We'll just knock that out. Right. Mm-hmm. And John Lennon, I think the song also to a large extent established, for better or worse, that iconic version of John Lennon as the sort of like political, you know, figure as well, you know, that became a dorm room poster
yeah.
at that point. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah, but I think of it as his response to all the people in the other, you know, popular music who are really trying to be political and
right.
revolutionary. Yeah. And his was like, nope. We don't really do that. That's not our bag. We're something a little bit more personal. I don't know.
It is.
That's always took it as a sort of a backlash against kind of, the other yeah, folks who
right.
are doing
it's sort
that.
Sort of sarcastic too, in mm-hmm. a way. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah. And he was, I guess you're right. He was sort of more the all you need is love kind of.
Yeah. Yeah,
type,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you'll permit me to drop in a little bit of my theory stuff.
Okay.
Like yeah. for a moment, you feel free to cut it if you want. But I have this theory about the Beatles and why they're so popular, and same thing with Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
And it all has to do with this. It's kind of a cockamamie theory, but it's sort of like an ontology recapitulates phylogeny sort of theory about culture and music, in that sort of the organism in a species undergoes the same transforms as the species itself, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
I had a teacher once say something to the effect of, human beings are right now going through puberty. And I was like, that's really interesting and weird. But, you know, as I thought about it, I feel like that's probably been happening, like maybe the turn of the century, 1900 or so, with the breakdown of like class systems and whatnot. And it's just over a long haul period of time. And it really kind of comes to a head in the 60s
mm-hmm.
with like as soon as Kennedy is shot.
Yeah.
Everybody kind of goes through this weird mourning, and then the civil rights period, all this stuff starts happening. And the Beatles and Dylan are there to write it all down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really revolutionary period right
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
And this song is sort of capturing that revolution in a sense.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know. It's a convoluted harebrained thing, but it's something that I've thought about for years.
Well, it's so interesting to think about it in that way. I don't know if I've ever heard anyone put, you know, it kind of in that sense that human beings themselves are just reaching the puberty period right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like the first time that youth culture really becomes a thing.
Yeah. Right.
Like before then, it was sort of like, you know, there are young people, there are old people, or, you know, there are young people, and then there are adults.
You're expected to be an adult at a certain point.
Mm-hmm. And then during this period, it's all about the revolution of, and it's about the conflicted feelings of, you know, like politics at that point split, got really conservative versus, you know, just, it really is a point in history where things really kind of go, whoa, things are happening. And it's a little bit like puberty, you know?
Yeah, and it's interesting to think about what you said about the song itself, too, that even within people that might have considered themselves all on the same side of an issue, that Lennon could point out that, hey, you're not actually doing the thing that, you know, that we want to do anyway. You know, it's even splintering inside of that, which is really interesting.
Exactly,
And I love that little rolling guitar riff, you know, before the song kicks back in. That's such a cool little break and a little bridge, you know, to it. Yeah. But also, correct me if I'm wrong, there's Revolution 1 on the White Album, which is a slower version.
Yeah, it's like a shuffle kind of version.
Almost bluesy shuffle.
So, yeah.
And then, of course, Revolution 9, which is just a avant-garde sort of tape thing. And then this was recorded for the B-side of Hey Jude as a totally different version.
Right. So on the timeline, this version would have come out after the White Album, right?
I'm not sure, but I know it was recorded last. I know that Revolution 1 and Revolution 9 were already in the bag.
I need to look that up.
Yeah, I do believe that's correct. And then I don't know if the Hey Jude single came out before the White Album. I'm not sure about that. It's something we probably have to check on.
I'm looking it up.
But I do believe the version we just heard, the well-known version, was recorded last.
No, so, okay, so the single did come out before
the White
Album.
Okay.
Okay, so this was the B-side to Hey Jude, as you mentioned. I just always thought it weird that the White Album, which is considered, you know, this another sort of landmark Beatles album, that this song wasn't on there, and instead you had an alternate version of the song,
isn't
which wasn't
strange?
Nearly as good in my mind.
Yeah, so, exactly.
You know, to make that choice.
And then, of course, I think this was a song that eventually appeared in a Nike advertising campaign in the whenever, was it the 90s or something?
Sounds right.
Yeah. And of course that changed. Was that the first song they ever licensed for any kind of advertisement?
See, they had lost the licensing rights.
Right.
But didn't Michael Jackson buy them?
Yeah, Jackson.
So that's when you started to see the Beatles used in commercials and things like that. And there was definitely some controversy at the time about it, but you couldn't really fault the Beatles so much you know, Apple publishing or whatever it was, but I think also too, over the course of the last 20 years, that has become less of a less of a sellout concern anymore. I mean, so many bands now do it as a way to just sort of make some money,
right.
So you can't really fault them, so I don't know that that's such a big thing anymore, but I think it's a getting back to, you know, sort of how you liked just the little touches, like the way that guitar line comes in, everything. I think it's just a really, despite being sort of a, what you might call sort of a hard rock song for the Beatles, it's also just a great pop song.
Oh, you know what I mean?
It's just really well written and really well constructed. So there you go.
And the way they mic the drums too on that song is kind of incredible. I mean, the snare drum just cuts through all that fuzz like pretty amazingly.
So we want to, as much as possible here, read some of the comments that people who contributed to this vote left, because some of them would actually comment on each song.
There was some eloquent writing in our fan club
and
Facebook group.
We should mention here that intern Sam, Sam Lisker, this was one of his picks, and he said, I'm in love with the guitar riff in this track. George shreds on the lead guitar and John's scratchy vocals are what makes this legendary. So going to the point of sort of like, I almost think there's definitely points in the Beatles catalog in their career where they're doing a song almost to like prove that they can do this style of song.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think this is one of those examples, right? Okay. All right. So we're going to do one more today.
Mm-hmm.
So you heard number 15 was And Your Bird Can Sing, number 14, Revolution. We're going to get the number 13 track here as the playout. Before we do that, mention that we can still talk about the Beatles if you guys have more comments. And, you know, I don't know. You might have an opinion on this
band. Maybe one or two.
So you can call and you leave a message. 612-440-1984. Or you can email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Leave comments and DM us or whatever you want to do. All of those at Suburbs Pod. Please rate and review our show on Apple Podcasts. That's really important. We're trying to get up to 100 ratings. We're at like 94.
So close. We're getting there. We're so close. So we only need like 11 more.
Yeah, something like that. So do that. And also, please just, you know, tell friends about the
show. That's all we're asking.
I think that would really help out. And, you know, you can really like, maybe you're don't have a lot of money this year to send out Christmas gifts or things like that. And maybe you're just sending cards or that kind of thing. You can just write the card. Hey, here's my gift to you. Listen to Rock in the Suburbs.
There you go.
I mean, that's the greatest gift of all, right? So do that. but please tell people about the show. We would really appreciate that. All right. So let's hit this number 13 track. It is Norwegian Wood. That is off of the Rubber Soul album.
It is, yeah. I would like to say that I have been glancing as we go through this at probably my favorite piece of Beatles scholarship. It's a book I may have mentioned before. It's called Revolution in the Head by Ian MacDonald. It's subtitled The Beatles Records in the 60s. And it does talk a lot about the culture and the background of these songs. However, as you can see, I'm missing page 129 and page 130, which contains Norwegian Wood.
Oh, so well, can I read you some listener comments?
Yeah, how about we start with that?
Okay, so here's what the listener / voters had to say. Mark Neese says, possibly the first indication that the Beatles were no longer just a boy band as they break away from puppy love to a song about an extramarital affair. What a beautiful song it is. I like to imagine all the teenage minds blown by this song. And Brad, I know you would suggest that maybe came a little bit earlier where they broke away from
a little bit, yeah, but yeah.
But I get what he's saying. Yeah. It's sort of a more maturation of their material, right?
Yeah, this is absolutely when they're sort of embracing. They had met Dylan by this time. He introduced them to some weed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they were partaking quite a bit at this time. So they were definitely experiencing the world in a different way at this point. And yeah, I mean, you can see the Dylan influence in Norwegian Wood. That's for sure.
Totally.
Yeah. It's the first Beatles song I ever learned how to play on a guitar.
Is that right? Oh, yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So once when I was in a band, I don't know that we ever did this live, but we tried to work it up in rehearsal. We tried to do this song, Norwegian Wood, with my friend Dan, who was our drummer, playing sort of the... Is it the sitar?
Yeah, there's a sitar.
He would play it on a marimba.
Oh,
is that
right?
Really kind of cool.
Oh, that's
kind of
cool.
I don't know that we ever got to where we played in front of people.
Yeah.
But I was going to say it's probably one of their first songs where the lyrics are not direct, you know, where you have to sort of, there's sort of a puzzle and you have to sort of figure it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that makes it a really interesting song too.
Yeah, as Nick Scalera wrote, the sitar, the rug, the mysterious woman, the fire, the bath. The song is literally a movie in barely over 2 minutes.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. It really is a great
song.
Yeah,
really well said. And obviously well noted for, I think, the first overt appearance of sitar. George's Eastern music, Indian music, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, in their music. So how many bands probably, you know,
took
the clue to get a sitar and put some sort of Eastern influence in their songs after this. I mean, literally
And
unbelievable
to
count.
It's also really where they started to, as a band, sort of direct themselves a bit more, as opposed to we go in the studio and we listen to what they have to tell us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they just took over a bit and it's good.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great
point.
Well,
that's what Rubber Soul is, sort of that breakout
point.
Yeah. Album where, they wanted to really become true artists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so let's listen to that. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I'm Brad Mailer.
And we'll have more Beatles songs when we talk to you tomorrow.
She once had me. She showed me her room. Isn't it good? Norwegian wood. She asked me to stay and she told me to sit anywhere. So I looked around and I noticed there wasn't a chair. I sat on the road.
Rock in the Suburbs presents the John Lennon Beatles song.